So, then, as the spirit is dependent upon these agencies, electricity and magnetism, for expression, and as these agencies are dependent upon form for expression, therefore the spirit grows till the form matures. Controlling spirit. Our attention was called this morning, by the lady medium whose organism we use, to an article appearing over the letters H. C, in the Louisiana paper, I think bearing the name of the Livingston Herald. It seems that the author of the article has been somewhat shocked by seeing a message given at this place, purporting, as he says, to come from a Negro girl. To him that circumstance places the Negro not only upon a level with the white creation, but a little above it, and he says the contemplation thereof is perfectly heart-sickening. He contends, if I understand him aright, that the Negro has no distinct immortality. If he has any at all, it is only that that has been borrowed from the whites. All he knows of the arts and sciences, of religion, of politics, of anything pertaining to intellectual life, he has borrowed from his white brothers. Being an imitative race, parrot-like, he says only what he has been taught to say, nothing more. Well, how much are we, claiming to be intelligences under white skins, in advance of the Negro in this respect? Do we originate a single thought? Hardly. Do we not copy from all the past through which we have come? Certainly we do. Do not we pattern after everything that we happen to fancy? We certainly do. If we hear a great thought expressed, we make use of it, no matter who expresses it, generally, unless prejudice forbids it. Farther on, the article seems to express the idea that spiritualists make a very great mistake in believing that the Negro is an immortal soul, and ends up by making reference to a spirit message which he tells us he has received from a reliable source. The spirit informs him that all caste and color and grade of development, and see, are preserved intact in the spirit world. Caste is attracted to caste, color to color, form to form, race to race, and so on. We are not able to quote the precise language, but we give the eyed answer. Following that article there appears one from the editor, which in itself is rather ambiguous. He does not take any particular stand in it, that we are able to discover, but seems to carry the idea that if immortality means anything at all, it means a conscious individual existence after death. There seems to be a feeling thrown out in the entire article that the white race alone has the crowning gift of immortality, that we, God's favored, chosen ones, are alone endowed with eternal life, that we, and we alone, possess and hold our individuality intact after death. Now I wish to make here a very broad and unqualified statement, and it is this: according to the accepted definition of the terms individuality and immortality, we do not, any single one of us, possess immortality, not one of us. There never was an immortal spirit, there never will be one. Nature and nature's God seem to have forbidden it. All intelligence seems to define individuality and immortality in one way, at least all that intelligence that is exhibited through physical life, and more than that, this intelligence seems to connect the two inseparably together. They seem to have woven bands around their immortality and individuality, and will not allow them to be separated, when they are in fact distinctly separated, just as much so as the musician is separate from the instrument upon which he performs. It is a well-known scientific fact that we are constantly changing our individualities, and if a man or woman was to be measured spiritually by their individualities and the characteristics which they possess, and immortality is allied to that individuality, inseparably so, then we cannot be immortal, because those individualities are constantly changing. We are not today what we were yesterday, not any one of us. The individuality that belonged to us yesterday is not ours today. We do not think precisely today as we did yesterday, we do not act precisely the same. We change constantly. Those who knew us in childhood only recognize us in mature age perhaps by our outward features, by our name, by those chiselings of physical life that may be recognized, but not by our thoughts, not by that which goes to make us intelligent beings. Paul says, Aou hen, I was a child, I spake as a child, acted as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. In other words, I changed my individuality. The mother who expects to meet her infant babe as a child in the spirit world, after years have been added to it in that life, will be disappointed, for the child grows in form and in intellect. The old individuality it possessed with its baby life here has been added to again and again and again, till the little germ is entirely changed. Our immortality does not consist in form, or in the amount of intelligence we have, or in the particular kind of intelligence that we are endowed with. What does it consist in, then? Why, that we have the gift of life, under some condition, forever and forever. By William E. Channing, July 20, 1869. Question. Will you define the knowing principle, consciousness? Tell us where it begins in the scale of nature. And is not the consciousness in man the same as that which we observe in the lower order of animals? And why should the consciousness of man have any more claim to immortality than that of the dog or horse? This was at page 324. Answer. The consciousness of the human has no more claim to immortality than that of the dog or horse, in my opinion. Each sphere of conscious life possesses its own distinctive kind of consciousness. We do not part with our consciousness when we sleep, neither does the dog or the horse. The evidences that prove to the contrary are numerous. We do not even enter a state where we part with all our consciousness, where we sleep, in the absolute. In our hours of deepest sleep, here in physical life, our spirits are conscious. There is an inner consciousness that never sleeps. The dog dreams, and demonstrates the fact. Those who watch him can realize it. The horse dreams. If this is true with regard to these two animals, why not with regard to all the rest? Scientists who have investigated in that direction tell us it is true. It is not possible to define consciousness, except by saying we are awake to our surroundings. By Theodore Parker, September 9, 1869. Question. What is the actuating principle of the involuntary forces of the body? If you say life, we ask, Ao, what is it? Answer. The body physical being possessed of two distinct sets of nerves, the voluntary and the involuntary, science tells us that the action of the subtle nervous aura, or force, when passing over the involuntary system, causes involuntary action. In its play upon the voluntary system, it acts upon the brain. Its force is first applied there, and from thence it descends throughout all the voluntary nervous system. You may ask, Ao, is there any difference existing between the force that acts upon the voluntary and that which acts upon the involuntary nervous system? I should answer, no, I believe them to be one and the same power. We may give as many names as we please, but after all it is one force. You call magnetism and electricity two distinct forces. This is a mistake, they are one. Seen under certain circumstances, you call them magnetism, under others, electricity. These terms must be used by you so long as you have need of them, but as you go up in life, you will drop one after another, and come down to simplicity of expression. Today you cannot understand it, so you must have your magnetism, your electricity, your psychological forces, and 1,001 terms for one and the same thing. Question. Are spirits enabled to behold the material universe independent of a medium through which to gain an entrance to our plane of action? If so, are they not often rendered miserable in beholding the many sufferings and violations of law in this life? Answer. They are able to behold the material universe, but not in precisely the same sense that you behold it. You see that part of the universe that appeals to your bodily senses. We see that also, but very dimly, unless we are in clear rapport with some physical organism called a medium. But we behold distinctly and clearly that which you do not recognize at all, that is the tangible to us, it is the intangible to you. To us, in our pure spiritual state, aside from media mystic control, all the objects in life that you can recognize with your human senses are intangible to us, they are shadowy, while that which you cannot see or feel, is the real life to us. Ayo, are they not often rendered miserable, asks the questioner, in beholding the many sufferings and violations of law in this life? To a certain extent they are, but not without hope. It is not that kind of midnight gloom which sometimes settles over the spirit in the earthly life. It is a keen, sharp pain, which leaves the spirit better for having passed through it. When we sometimes see our friends here in sorrow, we mourn with them, we shed tears over their sufferings. When we see them walking in paths of vice, which lead straight to the furnace of affliction, we lament over them, but not without hope, for we know that the spirit will finally overcome its weakness, and these scourges and whips will but have done their duty for them. Were they our children, we might mourn to be called upon to chastise them, and yet we might feel that it was best that we should do so. We may scourge in love, that the spirit may, through discipline, attain to fairer forms, and rise to better things. By Father Henry Fitz-James, September 21, 1869. Question. Is it true that people are led into the wilderness by the Spirit, as much as they were 1800 years ago? Answer. I do not know why it should not be true. If mortals could be led by spirits then, I do not know why they cannot be today. Question. Do you not think we are led into the wilderness of doubt, and left therein by those in spirit life? Answer. Sometimes. Spirits have as large a variety of means by and through which to work upon mortals as the varying circumstances of the case demand. Every condition requires a different degree of action. Question. Are spirits possessed of greater knowledge than we in this life? Answer. Only by observation, research, and study. They have knowledge, because they have seen more, or heard more. You would have greater knowledge concerning London, if you had lived the 15 years, than you now have. Question. Yes, but not if I had just arrived there. Do spirits receive knowledge immediately on arriving in the spirit world? Answer. No, knowledge is not shed upon us without efforts on our own part. It becomes precious to us only as it is hard to obtain. Are spirits conversant with the affairs of this earth? Answer. They are, some of them. Question. Why should some be, and others not? Answer. Because some are not interested in the affairs of this world. Some on earth are not interested in politics, and those who are much better informed than they upon that subject. So in our life, those who are not interested in the affairs of earth do not know so much of them as those who are. Question. Do spirits know of the future of affairs pertaining to this world? Answer. Only by comparison. They know that certain effects will follow inevitably certain causes. And they, being able to see those causes, while you are not, can thus more readily perceive the future. Question. Then they know more than we do? Answer. Life is a mathematical problem. The past, present, and future are connected. They who understand the present clearly, and know the past, can judge very correctly concerning the future. Astronomers can predict with positive certainty the approach of certain changes in the heavenly bodies. How can they do this? By study and mathematical demonstration, by comparing the past with the present, and judging in connection with the future. Life, in the absolute, admits of no division. The past and future are, in the absolute, the whole, the present. This was at page 328. Question. Is not the information of one spirit available to all? Answer. To all who desire. Question. Then why cannot the whole history of the world, from its creation to the present time, be given to us? Answer. Because there are no instruments fitted for the work. Why cannot you see the farthest star? Because there are no instruments by which your eye can secure knowledge. not because the eye is not capable of seeing, if it had a telescope of sufficient power to aid it. It is because you have not the instruments today. Question. What do you mean by instruments? Answer. I mean persons who can receive in your life this knowledge, and reflect it in the same light. By Theodore Parker, September 27, 1869. Question. We are told every person has a spirit guide. If this is so, by whom or by what law are they appointed? Answer. It is to be supposed that every person dwelling here in physical life is someone's spirit, if not more, who, in obedience to the law of want and supply, will be attracted to him or her. These spirits take a deep interest in them, and exercise a watchful care over the frailties of human life. Such would be considered guardian spirits. They are so by virtue of spiritual law. They come to you, if at all, by spiritual attraction. All souls, as well as the atoms of life, are repelled from or attracted to each other, as the case may be, by fixed law. If a soul is drawn to you, it is drawn by law, fixed law, and becomes your guardian spirit by law. Love is an attribute of law, divine, perfect, and holy, and it is the avenue by and through which your guardian spirits work. They love you, hence they seek to do you good. They come to you and watch over you. Because you are told that each has a guardian spirit, you are not to suppose that they are always present, and never absent. They come when the law of their being and yours demands that they shall come. Are you sick? You desire to be well, and your interior life instinctively and naturally extends out for something higher, beyond you, to make you better. It matters not whether it be the great God, or some kind spirit, and this desire reaches out to these spirits, and they come to you because they love you. Then the need is supplied, they leave you, and wait till the next occasion brings them to your side. Question. Does not the idea of a spirit guide interfere with the freedom of our actions, and our responsibility to God? Answer. By no means, because these spirit guides are not your leaders. You may as well say that you are not responsible beings, because you were not born such, because you had fathers and mothers who diligently cared for you till you were well able to care for yourselves. These guardian spirits do not take away our responsibility or our individuality, but they only aid us when we need aid. They are to us as supporters when we need them, but they are not our leaders. By Cardinal Chevreuse, October 4, 1869. Question. In this life some have good memories and more have poor memories. Can those of the latter class hope to be able in the future life to recall all that knowledge of history or science that they have once acquired, but seem to have totally lost? Answer. Each spirit possesses a distinct recollection of all its thoughts and of all its acts. It has an account of all. It has experienced in all its past life, and of all in its present life. Memory, with the spirit, is eternal. Those who have no large faculty or gift in that direction here, have it not because of physical deformity, physical want, the bodily organs through which memory makes itself known are perhaps in an inactive state, so much so that the indwelling spirit cannot use them with success. But it is not so in the afterlife. Every condition through which the spirit has passed is made a record of by the spirit, and that record is as eternal as the spirit is eternal. Question. What is the reason that spirits find such great difficulty to correct their errors of judgment in religion and philosophy in the future life, although their capacities are enlarged, and other more enlightened spirits are presumed to stand ready and willing to instruct them? And are not our opportunities much better here than in spirit life for acquiring knowledge of all kinds, as is to be inferred from the difficulty spirits seem to have in correcting their errors and changing their bad habits of thought and action? Answer. A.O. presumed that word is well used. It is presumed, says your correspondent, that enlightened spirits stand ready to assist the benighted who come from earth life, but be it understood that although enlightened spirits, upon all subjects, stand ready to give light to others, they are only suffered to impart in accordance with the law which controls them. When the benighted spirit asks in all honesty of soul for more light, and seeks for it, is ready to receive it, and make good use of it, then are they ready to give it. But if it were forced upon the darkened spirit, the old maxim of earth would be applicable here. The man convinced against his will is of the sample opinion still. Spirits do not find that difficulty in overcoming their erroneous opinions that you may suppose. You should not think that because they do not jump into immediate knowledge after death, they have a hard time to attain it. But it is the law of all spirits that they advance by slow and distinct degrees. There are no arches to span the gulfs over which spirits can march at will. They must move forward by regular gradation, they must ascend the ladder of human wisdom, no round being overlooked, ere they can pass out of darkness into light. The sun does not come immediately as the shades of night begin to disappear, and nature moves in all her departments slowly and surely. Thus it is with the spirit. By Reverend Joseph Lowenthal, October 5, 1869. Question. Has the Indian become more progressive than the white? And for that reason, are they exterminating the red man? Answer. Spiritually, in an absolute sense, the Indian is far in advance of the whites. I know well that the egotism of the white race will rise up and deny this assertion, but there will come a time when the religions of the two will be weighed in the balances of justice, and we well know which will be the sufferer. The pure, unadulterated religion of the Indian will put his white brother and his religion to shame, and when in yonder sphere the soul of the white man shall stand unclothed of all false surroundings, it will see that the Indian's religion is far in advance of his own. The Indian has received his religion through the reasonings of his soul, that is the natural kind of religion, that is unadulterated, pure, intuitive, free 332 from the world's uncomeliness. It has come to him intuitionally, he sees God in all things, hears him in the winds, perceives his attributes and all the workings of nature, which is his Bible, the Bible of God. I would that you with white skins had a religion as pure before God as that of the Indian. By Theodore Parker, October 14, 1869. Question. Is it true that in the spirit land we may pursue and follow out any branch of knowledge, whatever it may be, that has claimed our attention here, but which we have not been able to continue on account of the shortness of our stay here? Answer. Yes, it is true. The bud that is blasted here blooms there. That which really belongs to us by soul right, we can pursue there as a pleasure or as an employment in the spirit world. If the artist was such from his inner life, if he was such because he loved to be, not because external circumstances forced him to be, then he is an artist still, and all the circumstances that tended to cramp his efforts here are swept away there. He finds a larger range, greater liberty, more power. He finds that his artistic faculties unfold, he has those which he did not know he possessed here. Question. Of what use will a knowledge of many languages be to me in a future life? I have a passion for and have labored hard to acquire them, and it would be a pleasure to me always to continue in the pursuit of that branch of knowledge, but I am often led to inquire, will a knowledge of different tongues be of any use to me in a future state, since spirits of all nationalities can understand each other simply by the reciprocal reading of mind or thought? Answer. Language belongs to earth. It is the vehicle through which thought is expressed here in your life, but is not so in the spirit world. Therefore the acquirement of all the languages known would avail the student but little in the future life. Question. Are our everyday incidents and actions indicative of the future sphere to which our souls shall gravitate by the force of magnetic attraction? Answer. Yes, we lay the foundation at least of our houses spiritual here in this life. All those croppings out of the spirit which we see in the characteristics of individuals, in their acts, in their words, in all that goes to make up their lives, moral and mental, is carried into the spirit world, and becomes a part of their existence there. Controlling spirit, Our attention has been called to an article appearing in the Livingston Herald, in answer to one that appeared in the AO Banner of Light some few weeks since. This article is entitled, "Has the Negro an Immortal Soul?" The article which appeared in the Banner of Light, upon that question, a few weeks since, was a criticism upon one which appeared in the Livingston Herald some time prior. The author then took the ground that the Negro had no immortality, or, if he had any, it was only that which was borrowed from his white brothers, and he lost it at death. He had no soul apart from the soul of the white man. It seems that the authority of the ideas in question, namely, that the Negro has no immortal soul, is a disembodied spirit, who comes to this life, and through mediumistic life gives his views with regard to the Negro. In a note, from the editor probably, we are charged with evading the subject of Negro immortality in our article, and of being very careful not to say that he had an immortal soul, that he lived after death. He charges us with elaborating upon general ideas and avoiding the point at issue, and winds up by saying it is evidently a new subject to us, and has, no doubt, taken us by surprise. Well, certainly, the Negro is no new subject to me, was not when I was here, and is not now. I do not propose to enter upon this subject at any length, because I have not time. I only propose this afternoon to make a statement, which, I trust, will be understood. Since I failed to make myself understood in the former article, I hope to be understood now. First, then, I would plainly and distinctly declare that I know that the Negro possesses as much immortality as I do. I know that he has an existence in the spirit world, that I meet him at every turn. I know that immortality does not depend upon black skins or white. How do I know it? As we know all things, by observation, by study, by what we see, hear, and feel. When I meet and talk with the Negro in the spirit world, he is as much a disembodied spirit as I am. I know he lives there. It is not a matter of speculation with me. If immortality were dependent upon the white race, or was the result, as Hiskanian says, of phrenological development, I should pity the God that made us, for he would have made a most egregious mistake. Immortality dependent upon phrenological development. Then we must go still farther. We must say our immortality, our soul life, is dependent upon nature, upon form, that we grow up out of nature, and if we do, God does. If the soul in us is a result of natural development, then the God that protects us is a result of natural development. Now, I contend that spirit is prior to matter. I contend that ere matter was, as such, spirit was. I contend, also, that spirit is dependent upon matter for expression, but not for being. I contend that immortality is dependent upon matter for expression, but not for being. I contend that immortality, soul life, is not dependent upon a white skin or a black, upon the phrenological development of the Negro or the white man or woman. Why, I should descend very far down the steps of human science. I should forget that which has brought me to my present standard. I should ignore my God and the God of science, if I believed that immortality was dependent upon anything human. If our correspondent defines immortality as individuality is defined, why, then, of course he is right. It changes itself, of course, in expression. The immortality that is ours in expression today, now, mark us, that is ours in expression today, may not be ours in expression tomorrow, because the organic life through which immortality expresses itself is constantly changing. Therefore the expression must constantly change. But immortality, as immortality, is not dependent upon any change, upon anything in this world, upon anything in our world. Now, we should be very much pleased if this spirit, whether he be in or out of the body human, would come out from under his mask, and tell us who he was when he lived here in this earth life, tell us what his moral principles were, tell us what he was politically, tell us where he stood mentally, then we shall be able to measure him, to know what he is worth, what his opinion is worth. If he still keeps under his mask, we cannot know. I never did like anonymous articles when I was here, I do not like them now. I come out and declare myself to be Theodore Parker, nobody else. I answered the article in question. Everybody knows, that knows anything about me at all, what I believed when here. Everybody knows, that knows anything about me as a disembodied spirit, that I hold very closely to some of my ideas that were born here,